We are the Gemara on Daf Mem Amud Aleph. Larry and Ram and any other doctors present will forgive the Gemara's nutritional advice that we're going to get to momentarily. We're not there yet, but some suggestions. But we are on the first set of two dots. Amar Rava Bar Shmuel. So the previous Gemara we had said that we spoke about what is considered an interruption between hamotzi and eating of the bread. So the Gemara had three opinions amongst the Amoraim. Rav said tol bruch is not to take from the blessed bread, the bread blood that was blessed, take. That's not considered a hefsek when he's telling everybody to take, and apparently he hasn't eaten yet. But if you say bring some peanut butter for the bread, so bring some liftan, that's a hefsek. And then Rabbi Yochanan said even havei melach or havei liftan, both of them, salt, peanut butter, he says that's a hefsek. Rabbi Yochanan says they're not a hefsek. But if you say, oh, by the way, give Fido his food because we didn't feed the dog yet, so that is a hefsek. And then Rav Shesha says that no, even saying give Fido his food also doesn't constitute a hefsek because you're not supposed to eat until you've fed your animals. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rava Bar Shmuel at the two dots. Mishum Rabbi Chia in Abotzer Rashai Livtzoa Ad Sheyaviu Melach O Liftan Lifnei Kol Echad Ve'Echad. It's not Derech Eretz. You're not supposed to break the bread until everybody has, salt or condiments in front of them that they're going to eat the bread with. Let's say chodos. Okay, more likely in their time. And I suspect that peanuts are a new world crop, is my guess. Not sure. But so you need salt, you need chodos, something that you're going to eat with the bread. Rabba Bar Shmuel, so this is the same person, Rabba Bar Shmuel, who just said you're supposed to have the salt and the condiments ready. Rabba Bar Shmuel, Ikla Labei Resh Galusa, he was invited to the house of the Exilarch. And you imagine the house of the Exilarch, they serve nice food. Apikole Rifta, they brought him out bread. Ubotza Leheja, and he immediately broke bread. He didn't wait for them to bring Liftan or Melech. So Amrulei, they said to him, Hadar Mar Mishmaite, did you retract your statement? You had said that you're not allowed to be Botzea, you're not allowed to break bread until you bring the salt and the Liftan, and here you didn't wait. So have you changed your opinion? Were you Choser? Did you retract your opinion? So Amar Lehu, Les Dain, Sarech Bashash. This does not require bashash. What is bashash? So Rashi here, Rashi does not quote Moshe Boshesh. The Achronim want to know why. Some of them say it's very puzzling. Some of the Rishonim quote, Vayar ha'am ki voshesh Moshe lo redes minahar, which means bashash means a delay. Les dein tzarech bashash, this doesn't require delay. I mean, you don't need to wait for the other stuff because this is really good bread. No need for the lift on the melach. It's mechubad to eat as it is. So Rashi quotes the pasuk of Kivo Sheish Rechbolabo from Shiras Devora from Ein Sisra, and they want to know why did Rashi quote that pasuk as opposed to the pasuk in Chumash. Other Rishonim do quote the pasuk in Chumash. No, I don't know why.
Is it a negative connotation?
It just means to be delayed.
He's delayed, and that caused the egel, no?
Yes.
Well, yes, in that case, and in Sisra's case, he's delayed because he's dead. His mother's going to meet with disappointment, but that's a good delay. So, this is for Rabbi Feldman or Rabbi Lichtenstein. This is the rabbi's fodder for Rabbi's drasha. I don't know what the drasha is going to be, but this is what you make a drasha out of. Why did Rashi quote this pasuk? So, Ram, you picked the wrong calling.
It's not about waiting; it's about putting relish on it. Waiting is just. Not interested in waiting so much.
No, I understand, but sometimes we say, Sam, what we say is...
Maybe if you don't have to wait, you shouldn't wait.
Agreed. What he's saying is there's no need to wait here because
it's
this bread...
It would be wrong to wait because the bread itself is already...
I agree, but what he's saying, the reason why it's wrong to wait is because there's no need for the delay. Right? That's who you'd agree. If there were need for the delay, it would be appropriate to delay, because there's no need for it. The reason there's no need for it is because the bread is so good. Okay, so that's one interpretation. The Gaonim quote a different interpretation based upon a targum from Iov, Hayeochel Tofel Belimelach. And the targum of Tofel, I think, is Beshashta. And I think it means a condiment. So less than, so if the shash somehow refers to the thing that you actually eat with the bread, which might be an easier way of reading it, but it's obviously a very, very rare Aramaic word, which is why some of the Rishonim jumped to the verb kiboshesh boshalotis menharis.
Also the word yishboshoshu, that other mechava, actually probably comes from this, so they're like unrestrained.
No, I want to say, so the pshat in there probably... The pshat there is they weren't embarrassed. Hear me for a second. They were unclothed. However, you should know one of the targum, and not unclos. The least targum Yonasan says that v'lo yisbalshasho. They translates v'lo amtinu beyikrehon. They were not. They were in this glorious state, pure from sin probably, and they didn't wait. They didn't. They weren't amtinu was the word. If you look in the targum Yonasan, targum Mishalmi. They did not remain in that particular state, and that's the reading. I don't think it's shot, but that's the Targum is reading the word lo yisboshashu, is they didn't delay. They didn't remain in that particular state. I don't think it's shot. I think shot is they weren't embarrassed because vayushneim arumim ha'adam v'ishto v'lo yisboshashu. But that reading is there. If you also want to see the word vayochilu adbosh, I think by Eglon, when Ehud killed him, but he was in the bathroom or something like that. So his servants waited. Vayachilu ad bosh, probably bosh means not an embarrassment. It means a certain amount of delay. Yeah. So the word boshesh appears in a number of places. I think that the case of that one case happens to the pshat. So the Targum says the way you say, but the pshat I think is to be embarrassed. Yes.
There are those who say that you don't require melech.
So. Tosfos here, I don't think we spoke about this last week. I don't know, did we talk about it? So I'll say, Tosfos here says that our bread doesn't require melach, the top Tosfos. But then he quotes a tradition. I don't think we read the Tosfos.
No, we didn't read Tosfos.
So if you take a look at halfway through Tosfos, the top Tosfos, Havei Melach, it's about the sixth narrow line, or fifth narrow line. The last word is va'anu. Va'anu ein anu regilim lahavi al ashochan lo melech v'lo liftan. Mishum tepash shelanu chashuv. Right? Our bread is chashuv. I mean, jokingly say, it's like the Rav Yoh says, our nashim are chashuvos. Right? So they do haseba. So our bread is chashuv. V'arehu ki hada amar b'samoch lest ein tzarech b'shash. That this is on the earlier Gemara, so Tosha says, for the same reason that the Rav Bar Shmuel, who said you have to wait, didn't wait, because it was really good bread. So that's what we do. Mihu, Rabbi Menachem, hayimedaktek ma'ud, lahavi melach ala shulchan. Rabbi Menachem, must have been one of the Balei Tosos, I don't think he's a common appearance. So he quotes a medrash. He was machbit to bring, we don't know where this medrash is. He was machbit to always have melach on the table, to the isa b'medrash, kishi Yisrael yoshvin ala shulchan, umamtidin zehasa achayit yilidehim. When everybody's sitting at the table, but they're waiting for the rest of the people to finish washing their hands, v'heim below mitzvos, and they are, they're not doing mitzvos then. There's nothing going on. Hasatei mekatreg alehim. You see these late tzonim are sitting around doing nothing. So ubris melach megin alehim. And the bris melach, a reminder of God's bris melach that he made with us, the karbanos, is a reminder on the table that we have mitzvahs, even though we're not actively engaged in here. It's a very interesting. In the notes, they point out that we don't know where this medrash is. You actually have a very similar medrash, and I think there's a common theme. This is for the rabbis' drashas, okay?
You have a drasha about salt a few months ago.
Well, no, this is for a different drasha, about I'll call spirituality and purpose in the world. There's a medrash about, I think it says by in Tilma Kofiot Test, Sasan Ochial Amarsecha. So what is this pasuk? What was David speaking this pasuk about? I rejoice over your amarim, over your sayings, like someone who finds great bounty. So the medrash, I think, on that pasuk says that David HaMelech found himself in the Beis HaMerchatz unclothed, and he didn't have his tefillin on, and he didn't have his tzitzis on, and he felt arum in amitzvos. He had nothing there. And then he saw his bris milah, and he said, oh, I'm still here with a mitzvah. Now, what is the point of that medrash? I don't think the point of that medrash is David is the Beis HaMerchatz, since he's a meal. He says, oh, I have a mitzvah. I think the point of the medrash, and I think the same point as this, is that a Torah Jew is, no matter what he or she is doing, is always supposed to be in a certain frame of mind with our mitzvahs around you. Everything we do in this world is supposed to be towards a particular purpose. You know, kol pal Hashem l'manehu, that everything we do is somehow is for the Ribono Shalom. So the idea that we could ever be in a situation where we are empty of mitzvahs, so we're on the table, we're all sitting around and nobody's saying anything, they're not engaged in the Beit Torah and so on, well, that's problematic. So we have the melech on the table to remind us that no. We're being quiet because we're not supposed to talk right now, but we are engaged in mitzvahs.
Didn't Hillel say that when he's doing the mitzvahs, he's going to wash himself?
Okay. All right. Yes, Lechvod Kono.
I'm actually mocked in one place to always do yisur. And that's at a catered dinner when you have the washing bowl and everything. And they have those little pieces of bread or even little tiny rolls. They get wet and it's really
necessary.
No, so
does the salt help?
No. There's usually a salt shaker there.
Yeah.
And that bread is not really.
I know my sign is, does the salt even help?
Yeah, okay.
All right. So anyway, so that's the minhag. So I believe this is cited by the Ramban Shulchan Aruch, that even though our bread does not require salt, because our bread tends to be good bread.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, one should have salt on the table.
Did they bake their bread with salt?
Did they bake their bread with salt? I don't know. Actually, I'm trying to think, is there anything that suggests... I would think probably not, but I'm not sure. I don't know. Does anybody bake here who knows what is the impact of salt when you bake? Does it have any particular... Other than flavor. It doesn't serve in any catalyst type way or anything like that. It doesn't change it. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to know. The fact that the Gemara says that you're supposed to put salt on it suggests they didn't put it in it. Right? I think part of the reason why our bread tastes finer, some of it is white flour, it may not be good for you, but it tastes good. And some of it is that we have sugar in it, we have salt in it typically. So if you bake it totally without salt, when you have like no salt, when you have salt-free foods, particularly because we become acclimated to the salt, it doesn't taste very good until you least de-acclimate. So, if there is such a word. So I imagine they probably didn't put salt in their bread, but I don't know.
Is this the only source for salt on the table? What about alcohol, shalvan, katak, melach?
I mean, I think that's the first melach is that. Right. In other words, v'chol korban minchascha b'melach k'mlach v'loz tashvis melach briselokech ma'am chasecha al kor korban chasabel. So I think you're 100% correct. I think there's certainly an idea we raises that the shulchan being like a mizbeach, and therefore there should be salt on it. And I wouldn't even be surprised if someone says that more explicitly than this. Right. This is kind of almost indirect, but yeah, that the shulchan should have melech on it because it's like the mizbeach.
Isn't there something about not putting a baby on it? Is there a custom or something? Putting a baby on the table because the shulchan is mizbeach? I've heard something weird about that.
I don't know.
Put a baby on the table. Okay.
I'm not saying you do or should. I've never encountered that. So. Okay. Right. I don't doubt that somebody has said that, but there are many things in our religion. You know, I'll titosh. That you have to have respect for Minhag Yisrael, but sometimes there are Minhagim which are just Baba Mises, so you have to figure out which it is.
So, but going back to it, if there is no salt on the table with our bread,
yeah,
you shouldn't ask for the salt, right?
I think the Rishonim would probably say that's not a reason for a hefsek.
Right.
If you ask me, right. On our table, you shouldn't.
Right.
You know, again, if you had bread that was only good with salt for whatever reason, or that was the way you always ate, that would be one thing. But just in other words, if you're going to use the bread with the salt, right? So if you're going to use the bread, if you always eat the bread with the salt because you think it tastes better that way, so I think that then you can. But just to put the salt on the table, I think would be a hefsek.
Yeah,
that's a good point you're making. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. Because of Rabba Bar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Chia, in fact, Rabba Bar Shmuel himself, I'm guessing, is a pretty rare, very rarely cited, and here he's citing the name of Chia, we're going to get a chain of those things, which are somewhat connected, not all of them. Rabba Bar Shmuel. I didn't do the Bar Ilan search, and then it's Rabbi Mar Shmuel quoting Rabbi Chiya, which I'm willing to bet the following, Sam, which is that if you were to take a Bar Ilan and look throughout Shas, these are the only occurrences of that, or every occurrence of Rabbi Bar Shmuel on the name of Chiya is found in this sugya, right? Because that's the way they work sometimes. It's a feature of oral transmission. So you organize things sometimes by superficial characteristics, which will stick together in your mind. Makes sense. Oh yeah.
Does either Abai or one belong to, say, Rav Shul's school and the other to Shmuel's? They're just a separate book.
Not that I know of. Not at that point. That's far I can tell.
By the way, the Ramah quotes Larry's, the Shulchan Domal on his
back. Mezbeach. Oh.
And he quotes it from the Beis Yosef, the Shem Shibole Halacha.
Okay.
He also quotes the Tosfos.
Okay.
And he quotes the Tosfos as the second reason.
Right. Okay. So there you go. Excellent. Okay. So Amar Rav Shmuel, Rav Bar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Chiya. This is actually only directed to the men, not to the women. Ein Mei Raglayim Kolim Ela BiYeshiva. It means if a person wants for health reasons wants to empty, I'll say his bladder, so it only will be effective when a person is sitting. It's not for anatomical reasons, but you have to consider the following. They might have been urinating on ground, and the concern was that it would splatter back on them, which was probably a twofold concern. Number one, you don't want to splatter back on you. Number two, there is this tradition the Gemara has that a person has to be careful about washing the drops of urine off his feet. It's talking about a man, lest he be suspected of being a koshacha, that he was literally dismembered, that he was injured, his penis was cut off partially, and that's why the urine is not, you know, going a distance, and of course, and which then they'll lead. Again, this seems a little far fetched, but then they'll think his children are manzerim because of course shafa can't actually be molded. So that's why they talk about being mishashik. Now, it's not relevant, you know, the way, it's not relevant at least in the the way we build bathrooms today, because if you're, you know, the concern is not getting it on your feet. Not that the last drops that aren't coming out with force wind up on your feet, so it's not really a concern. But back then, normally, it would have been a concern, so the best way to do it is to sit down so your feet are away from the stream of urine and you don't worry about it getting on you. Ram, you look confused.
I mean, women don't splatter, this whole thing is...
No, but they're sitting down. They're sitting down in the first place. And you don't have to worry about koshata either.
Sitting down or is it having a bowl?
Well, again, for them,
if it's ricochet, if there's no bowl, it's going to. No, really,
but you can
ricochet.
Keep it. I'm not going to try to work this out.
Exactly.
This is just the way they describe it. You know.
That's
you have to go. You have to go on a hike in the woods, and then you can practice and figure out what exactly the Gemara was talking about. So what's that? So what's that? The Gemara is going to give you an eitzah. Then the Gemara says, "Uva afar tichoach." If you have very soft earth where it's not going to splatter back, then and that's probably not that it's so soft. It's that it absorbs it, so you don't get it pooling. So then, afilu bami, that's not a problem. The ileka of artikuach yahamu b'makom gavoh v'yashin l'makom midron. Stand on on top of a hill going downwards. Okay, you know, one of the things.
Goes back to what you said before, like everything you do should have a.
Well, I would say an additional point here that the Gemara, we tend to take the Gemara is just not just a commentary on the Mishnah, and it's not just a sefer halacha, right? The Gemara, and it's not just a sefer agada, you know, Jewish philosophy and thought. The Gemara addresses the fact that it's going to talk about now. We're about to read a nutritional advice. Right, it's imagine the following. I think it once happened with someone who's a huge Talmud Chacham, probably one of the straightest Talmud Chachamim you'll meet. But I was told that he came to Shulam Tinek, and he spent most of the time talking about like nutritional advice and eating properly and some of the things you should eat. And I think most of the things he said were probably correct too. But that would be very strange. You invite a scholar in residence at Talmud Chacham KJ, and he starts talking to you about, well, this is what you should kind of food you should eat, and you should have these kinds of vegetables. You should avoid those things. It's like that's not what we called you here to do. Right? We asked you to come to teach us Torah. Now, his response might be, this is Torah. Okay, so you have to know the context in which you're in, and that's not what the expectation is when you do it. The expectation, if I'm going to talk about nutrition, is you should consult the most expert nutritionists, and based upon that, that's the way you should generally eat. Right? That would be all I'm going to say. And as many of you know, I have lots of shittos about food and running and all those things, you know, which you can ask me privately. But I don't see that as rabbinical in nature. I see the principle that you should exercise, you should eat properly. That's a Torah perspective. Okay, Dan, I have nothing more to say about that now. So I think the fact that the Bavli includes that just tells you that it's not just the Sefer Halacha and the Sefer Machshava, which obviously is the primary purpose, but they saw this every part, as Larry said, every part of the human experience is lived with the sense of being in the presence of God. Everything is supposed to have a chachma to it. The way you eat, the way you relieve yourself, all of these things are supposed to be engaged with in a derech haseichel. So why shouldn't these things be here? It makes perfect sense. Well, but the Rambam, yes, correct. I'm sorry, there's the Rambam in the middle of Hilchos Deos when he gives him. And I will tell you, by the way, most of the Rambam, what he says in Hilchos Deos, is probably still held to be correct. Not everything, but most of it. So, but the fact that your Rabbi looks at you 100% correct, the fact that the Rambam chose to put in Hilchos Deos tells you something, that when the Hilchos Deos is really about midos, it's about proper character. So part of proper character is behaving in an intelligent way as a human being, taking care of yourself. So, anyway, the reason this is here, it has clearly no connection to what's before or after, is because it's Rava Bar Shmuel Amar Rabbi Chiya. Okay, fine. Okay, and now advice that's relevant coming back to everybody in the shir. The Amar Rava Bar Shmuel Mishmed Rav Chiya, Achar Kol Achilascha Echol Melach, the cardiologist might disagree with this, I'm not sure. The Achar Kol Shtiyascha Shteimayim. So after you've been drinking wine or whatever else, you should drink water. That might be more likely. Certainly if you were drinking alcohol, I don't know if it's actually true, but more likely to avoid a hangover if you have enough water. I don't know if that's actually true.
Did they drink? They didn't drink water because it wasn't...
So I don't know. Your question is how they... this might have been bad advice.
But they drank wine.
Correct. They diluted their wine and water. So I don't know. Look, there may have been... Maybe springs. I mean, springs are generally safe to drink from. So maybe they kind of knew that. I don't know how they were getting this water.
What did they drink? This dehydrated
wine. Wine, beer.
They would dilute the wine in water. And most of the hydration was probably actually from the food. So if you're eating much more, you know, fruits, vegetables, things that, you know, like that.
All of them drank wine all day, all the time. Everybody was just drinking wine.
Remember that wine was much, they diluted it. Easily three or four parts water.
Water,
but the point is the alcohol. They think that the alcohol in the wine actually is what made it the water safe to drink. That is what historians speculate.
I'm sure they thought that, but once they started getting sick, they probably quickly realized that wasn't helping.
You got used to your local water, right?
Okay. Right, I'm saying. But.
Okay, that is at least I think contemporary theory as to why they diluted their wine. It was so they could drink water safely.
In other words, once the alcohol content goes below 1%,
but it's not 1%.
Well, if they're diluted, wine is 10%, and then they're
diluting. In three parts one, it's 3 or 4%.
3%, you're not getting any antiseptic effect from that.
Okay, okay.
Doctor Wise.
Maybe in the Shtanu, that's fine. I'm not advising people to take contaminated. Listen, if I drink water on a hike, unless it's coming out of a spring in the rock, so you know we purify it with whatever we purify it with. But we don't take beer along on our thing and pour some beer in there. So okay, Tanya Nami Hachi, Achar Kol Achilascha Echol Melach VeAchar Kol Shesiyascha Shesemaim VeIatanizok, and you won't be harmed. Okay. Tanya Idach, Ochal Komacha Vala Ochal Melach, Shasal Komashkim La Shasalim. Let's say you didn't. You didn't top it off. Bayom Yidag Min Reach HaPeh, Uvalayla Yidag Min Askara. During the day you should worry about bad breath, at night you should worry about Askara. I don't know exactly what Askara was. At some point I thought it was something like whooping cough. I'm not 100% sure. I think from elsewhere it sounds like something they'd be choking on. It particularly affected the children. What? That's certainly bacterial, right? Anyway, it sounds like something that you choke, and not surprisingly, I would imagine even if it's bacterial, it's something children are more vulnerable to. They talk about fasting kadesh lo yipol askara betinokos is the expression. I forget where that Gemara is. So, okay,
the Lashon Chachamim on the bottom of these Gemara says that it's Cholin Hamachil B'Ma'ayim V'Gomer V'Garam.
Okay, it starts in the stomach and ends, yes. That would by the way, that would have made sense at night. At night, it would have made sense. Yes, I thought about that, but yes. But I don't think that's what Askara is not reflux. Askara, whatever it is exactly, it was something that was fairly deadly. Yeah, yeah. Tan Rabbanan, hamikapa achilasa b'mayim. Someone who tops off, mikapa leaves literally a lashon of floating, but it means you top off your food, your meal with water. You don't have intestinal issues. Okay. Vikama, how much do you have to drink? Amar chista, ketone lapas. A ketone is a certain measure of water, and pas, I assume, means a loaf of bread. Can't tell you exactly how much that is. Amar Rav Mari, Amar Rav Yochanan, haragil ba'adashim, achas l'shloshim yom. Someone who has lentils at once every 30 days, monea askara mitoch besa. It will prevent askara. Now, again, I would not be running so fast to insist that askara has to be something that we would say that lentils help you with. I mean, I'm sure lentils are probably pretty good for you, actually, but I don't know that. Again, their assumption of that, of what caused the disease, obviously, was probably in many ways much more anecdotal. Right? People do that today as well, right? Somebody got a shot. And the next day they get sick, and of course it was the shot that caused them to get sick. That's the way our minds work. If it's typically not accurate, so one of my good friends who's a doctor likes to always remind me the plural of anecdote is not data. But that is sort of how they that's how it worked. When they thought that something caused something, if we think it doesn't cause, it's scientifically not accurate. It's because they did something and it seemed to work. It turns out it was coincidental, but then that's how popular things come into being. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, I think somewhere in the second Chelek, where he points out that we don't accept Chazal's authority on science and medicine, but he's defending Chazal and saying you shouldn't think less of them for that, because science was less developed in those days, and they learned these things from the people who were scientists around them. Which is, of course, 100% correct, because that's exactly what rabbis do today. Nothing has changed. And you have to render a decision. You have to know whether the person is allowed to go to the Michal Shabbos, to go to the hospital on Shabbos. Well, the question is it pikuach nefesh? Well, I, as the rabbi, am not deciding whether it's pikuach nefesh. I'm going to turn to Larry or to Ram or to any other doctor and say, okay, tell me, is this person's life in danger? If they say to me yes, then the answer is go to the hospital. If their answer is I'm not sure, the answer is go to the hospital. If the answer is what are you talking about? That's not an issue at all. Then, no, there's no reason to be Mechal Shabbos to go to the hospital. But that's not... And what happens if it turns out that the medicine today is wrong, and in 30 years from now, we realize that things that we were doing makes no sense? Okay, so then we'll paskin based upon the science then. Does that mean we did a terrible thing now? No, you operate based upon the best science you have available to you at the time. Ein l'dayin ela mash'enav ro'os. So that's why this is, this may seem strange to us, but I think the most significant part of this is not the context, but the fact that Chazal actually chose to put it here. I will confess to you that even I have my lines when my students and I were learning Gittin this year, and we got to the seventh parak, and the parak begins with a person who's been seized with a fit of insanity, and he told them to write a get before he was seized, after he's Misha Chasov Kodiakos. So the Gemara has two very long sections of Agada that immediately start in. One is about the stories of Ashmedai, Asmodeus, the king of the demons. That was worth reading. And then the next part was all these, because Kordiakis, this disease, comes from eating certain kinds of foods. So the Gemara presents what the cure is. The Gemara goes through a whole series of cures. That we skipped over. I decided not to torture my students. It would be primarily an Aramaic lesson, not a lesson in anything that would actually be relevant. So in some cases, it's, we may skip over. But here, it's short enough, so we're not going to. So the Gemara says that Amar Amari Amar B'yochan. I'm sorry. Next one is Aval Kol Yom Alo. You shouldn't eat lentils every day. My time in Mishum Dekasha L'Reichapeh. It's bad for bad. It causes bad breath. The Amar Rav Mari Amar Rabbi Yochanan Haragil Bechardal Achs L'Shloshim Yom. If you have mustard every 30 days, Moneach Halayim Mitoch Beso. And you notice that he chose mustard and not ketchup, because ketchup is mostly sugar, whereas mustard doesn't have any of that. So obviously he chose mustard. So then your monea because of the mustard seed, you're monea illness from your house. However, avol kol yom alo, you shouldn't eat it every day. My tummy shouldn't the kasha lechusha the liba. Okay, I'll let Larry weigh in if he would like to. It causes heart weakness. Okay,
heart failure.
Okay, so chusha the liba, literally weakness of the heart. Amar Rav Chiya Barashi Amarav. Now we have more dietary advice. Haragil bedatim ketanim. Now, I suspect that contemporary, at least, advice would say, yes, small fish are good for you. For starters, fish are good for you. And for further starters, they have less mercury in them. But that's a modern problem, not an ancient problem. But if you have sardines, we'll call dagim and ketanim, sardines. And are herring also very small? I never see the whole herring. So, the herrings are small fish. So you're supposed to have herring and sardines. You see the makar for good Jewish food here. Okay? Kiddush, that's it. Okay. So, below ode, not only is it good for your intestines, Ela Shadagim Kitanim, Mafrin, Marbin, Umavrin, Kogufa Shaladam. They make it fruitful, they multiply it, I don't know what that means, and unless it means they are good for fertility, and then separately, Marbin, Kogufa Shaladam, make a person's entire body healthy. Okay.
A lot of this advice is actually pretty sound, yeah. But is there any statement from Chazal themselves recognizing or giving away some self-awareness that this advice has less authority than the halacha and avatah? Because I know Rambam says it, we know
the
it.
Gaonim, the earliest statements that I'm aware of, the Gaonim already say that we don't follow Talmudic medicines. I don't know. I wouldn't expect it earlier because, again, they're not, I don't think... I don't think they thought... you're asking a really good question, and I made you speak because we make an assumption that I assume they thought the same way, that they understood the difference. This is what I would say. Rishonim are sensitive to the fact that there are different formulations, even when it comes to things that are not scientific and medical, things you should and shouldn't do. La'olam, you know, al, something like that. There's a recognition that that's a different formula than osir.
Right.
So I think when you look at these things in particular, you'll see the formula. You often see formulations. Someone who does such and such dumb barosha, right? As it's dangerous. But so I think that is like it's one of. I will tell you one case that makes me really wonder why. Again, the Rambam omits it. Maybe for scientific reasons, maybe for formulation reasons, but the practice of not having fish with meat. So the Gemara doesn't say it's also. It says it's kasha l'davar acher. I don't think it says. I mean, it says someone wouldn't eat it. Particularly, Amora wouldn't eat it, not even by itself, without milk. He said that the fish that was grilled in the oven with meat, he wouldn't even eat it with salt. And it says, the Gemara says it's kosher davar. It never says it's usher to eat. So the Rambam happens to omit that then. The Rambam doesn't have the din, and I don't think any, you know, I don't think any doctor today would say that eating meat and fish together is problematic.
It just undermines Chazal in the eyes of people who are skeptical. It's a very obvious reason to undermine it because it, you know, if they're not willing to distinguish, then it sort of suggests that there's an that they're
sure, well,
borrowing from something that's not authoritative on everything.
I think that for the same reason in the Haredi world, there's a stream of thought that pushes back very hard against the Rambam and the Gonim is because it was in a world in which, you know, Das Torah
right.
is constructed very broadly. So if Chazal could be wrong on things, let's say non-halachic matters, al achas kam v'kama, we who are, you know, off our tachas kapos raglim, we certainly could be wrong in the other things, and that undermines the authority community. If you look actually to Rav Sternbach's letter attacking, I think it was attacking directly Nassim Slifkin. You read the letter, if you read it, and somebody translated it into English, you will see, to me, I read it and I see what I hear are the echoes. These issues not about what Chazal thought about. It's issues of what it does to Das Torah now. It was almost explicit. So yes, I think that cuts both ways. It's always the nuanced position is the one that's
the idea of going to the Chazon Ish for your, you know, to get a consult on your various
right.
Or
a Hasidic Rebbe, right? Or going to Hasidic. It was more classic to go to Hasidic Rebbe to do that because the Rebbe was seen as a guide for your life. It was unusual to do that in Lithuanian circles.
Left topic question. Sociologically, in Israel, do the Chilonim, quote unquote, get any credit for, you know, devoting their lives to figuring out what makes for a healthier life? Are they sort of is that in some sense they're not purely chiloni, that they're actually are engaging in activities that the Gemara
sounds like something Rav Kook would say.
Yeah.
That's the very Rav Kook thing to say, which you know. Yeah. But I mean,
they should be given a bracha to say before that their mitzvahs.
Well, we don't make up brachos, but yeah. Yeah.
Or
Rabbi Feldman.
Yeah, I think that for David's point, that from, you know, if we think the halacha is it's follow whatever the medical advice is, we think that halacha is to follow whatever contemporary medical advice is. I mean, we follow that halacha from Rabbi Ami's perspective. This was the medical advice. So it's just as halachic as every other statement. So it's just that happens to be. It's just like today, Rabbi Wiener says you should run because that's healthy. In 20 years, they'll discover that it's not healthy.
It would just be nice if Rabbi Wiener said that.
So we'll say that Rabbi Wiener, you know, so Rabbi Wiener didn't know. It's just that the halacha is you're supposed to do whatever is the right thing to do. So.
Yes, but the difference, there is still fundamentally a fundamental difference between the two, which is this is the metzias,
right.
To which, on which halacha depends.
Rabbi Ami would say that. In other words, if he said, I'm following, this is what the advice is, and my position is only, you know, valid to the extent that this is the medical opinion, then it would be totally, you know, it would fit, right?
One thing I would say is I don't think you'd expect the Gemara to sort of suggest such a notion based on what Rabbi Feldman is saying, which is that we have a much greater sense of science changing. And by the way, while we have that sense, most people would still be shocked. Like, I don't think that the laws of gravity are going to turn out to be wrong. Now, I could be totally wrong. But like, even we,
physical principle.
So Larry, I know that you can, I agree, and I know you can make chilukim. And I know as you move from mathematics to physics to chemistry to biology, and the more you move in that direction, the less definitive things may be, the more complex the systems are. That's
no,
a better way of putting it.
I mean, I think that there's something that are fundamental principles. And then
I agree, but let me put it to you this way. Newton's laws you think would not be subject to the change or be wrong, but Einstein proved they were wrong. Now, Lemaisa, in most of our lives, they're not wrong, but they are wrong, in fact. Right? So they're not wrong to a degree that we would ever notice in any of our normal applications. So, I agree with you 100% that things that are more basic, that's why I sort of picked that.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a political discussion, but we've seen how science in front of our own eyes has evolved. Right? You look at vaccines. Right, in terms of what the benefit was and what the recommendations were and how the science kind of got a little bit lost at some point and then kind of has come back a different way, right? Like, if you look at a booster now, it's not the same as getting the original two shots. You know, and even though the scientists said to do one thing, or even the masking outside at the beginning.
Right, so...
Sometimes the science gets lost within society.
Correct, absolutely, you know, and you only see it retrospectively.
And the science made no sense to wear a mask outside. It made no sense because otherwise everybody inside would have had to get the virus when you were living with someone. And at the beginning, when no one was vaccinated, it was maybe, you know, somewhere between 15 to 25. So that
we live in a world also where the
reality.
Correct.
You
know,
I look. So
right. No, I agree. Science, the laws of nature never change, but our understanding of them do.
That's
because
right.
We're human beings. That's and right. we're not in, you know, Vulcans.
Anonymously, one of the shearmates suggests that it's not me. So I'm just saying, Rami. Aspira could be a misprint, a misspelling of aspira, which would make sense with the text. Aspiration. So okay. you it starts with the intestines and it comes right. up to your throat. Could be something, and you go to bed at night and you talk about reflux. So that's the whole connection.
That sounds very reasonable to me.
It's not one of those
okay.
liquid
contents. So, what's that? No, it's not. It's not an obvious. If anything, it would have to been. It would have to been yes. It have to be one of those visual things which you expect.
It is okay.
Right. This is what I will say. The following: I'm a betting man. The presence of the samach in that form suggests very strongly it's a Greek word. So I it's typical of the lamdan in the base medrash. Do I really care what askara is? No, it's a disease. That's all. Do I know what this food is? It's a food, right? It's the platonic disease. I don't need to know what the disease is. Obviously, for historical reasons and other kinds of reasons, it's very interesting to actually know what it is. But, you know, the Beis Medrash, you know, I don't agree with this, and I don't like this, but, you know, the Rav famously commented that Yerideya was pots and pans until Rav Chaim came along. Now, the Rav saw that as redeeming Yerideya. Some of us say, no, actually, we don't see it that way. But that certainly captures a certain mode of thinking in the Beis Medrash. You know, when you learn, I learned Hilchos Shechita, and they don't require it anymore, but I did Hilchos Shechita with Rabbi Ganach. When I did Yerideya, Rabbi Ganach, his chaburas were all the Rav's lamdas in Hilchos Shechita. But the rest of us all learned the Shulchan Aruch. Did any of us look at a cow? Like a cow, it's a platonic cow. It's got a neck and shech somewhere. Whatever it is, what it is. So that's not very useful in the real world, but in the Beis Medrash, it's okay. So, okay.
Love arranged for a field trip for us. I learned Yerideya with the Rav.
You probably had to do Hilchos Trefus in those days too, also. No?
We didn't really. But he arranged for a field trip, and I refused to go because I was afraid if I ever went to a slaughterhouse, I would
never eat meat
in my life. But I figured I'm not going to be that kind of a rogue. He's going to be fasting on the night of the showcase and on the bedikas haraya.
I will just tell you that what is interesting is that in this door, far more students are interested in actually doing it. I've had a number of students, Rabbi Loiki. At the OU, teaches Shechita. I have one student who just about has his Kabbalah on Behema, Daka. He's done chickens for years. He even offered when we'd have a shiur barbecue to bring chicken, and my wife said, no, thank you. I prefer my chicken come from the supermarket rather than plastic. He would have done all the work, but, or as my wife also likes to say, her grandmother, who was not Jewishly educated well, you gave her chicken, she knew what to do with it. My wife, you know, can learn Gemara, but you give her chicken, she wouldn't even know what she's looking at. So, I think the older way was better, but, you know. Okay. Be that as it may, well, I'll have to find out what Oscar actually is. Okay, so anyway, so the Gemara continues. Amar, the first medium with line, Amar Avchama Bar Chanina, Haragil Beketzach, Eino Ba Lide Ke'ev Lev. Now, I thought that Ketzach was cumin, but I think it's not. That's Kamon. Somebody have a translation of Ketzach?
Yeah.
I thought it's cumin. No?
They just
call it Pesach. Is there a
note on the bottom for
it? Yeah.
Pesach, Esav Bar HaGadol B'Toch HaDagan.
That's not really useful. Yes.
It's a wild grain. Or
grass that grows amongst the grain. That's
fennel.
That is, someone said. Who said that?
That's Aaron.
Aaron, thank you. Fennel. Fennel is actually this. It grows amongst the wheat. It's, but I don't think that's what Ketzach is. And Kamon appear in the same pasuk. That's why I think Kamon is almost certainly cumin. But I some reason I thought that Ketzach is. So Rago be Ketzach in a bali de ke'ev leif. Okay, you don't have any heartache. Larry, you can wave. Okay, Larry should be given this poster.
Like foxglove.
What's that?
Modern Hebrew
Oscar. Okay.
Doesn't really help.
All right, so, Mesevei, Rabbi Shimon Melil Omer, Ketzach Echad Mishishim Samane Hamavesu. It's one of the 60 spices of death, or potions of death. V'hayoshen lemisnach gorno, this is very appropriate to the events of this past week. Someone who sleeps to the east of his silo, where they've been winnowing stuff, so you have all the air pollution in the air, all the little particulate matter blowing, and it blows eastward, domo barosho. You know, he's responsible for his own death, so very apropos. So you see that ketzach is actually is potentially dangerous. So the Gemara says, lokasha haberecho habetaimo. Rashi says that the reach is very bad, but the flavor is good. And now the Gemara tells a story. Ime the Rabbi Yirmiyah, afyale rifta, she baked him bread, umedabkale, she sort of stuck she buried the bread in this ketzach, and then umekafa, then she would peel, almost like she baked it on the outside, and then she peeled it off. So you still had the taste in the bread, but somehow you don't have the smell. I mean, then I don't know what that means, because the taste and smell are generated by the same mechanism, meaning they're particles. That's what smell is. That's something I think Chazal did not understand, that smell is just particles in the air.
But maybe it's the more volatile part.
Right. But when they talk about Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa, so I don't know that they fully recognize that it's Recha, when you get Reach of something, you cook the Vesev's Reach, it's particulate matter. It should be subject, and in a conceptually speaking, it really should be subject to the same rules of Bithel B'Shisha.
If you lose the Recha, you can't really taste that.
What's that?
You lose your smell, you can't taste it.
Well, that's a different, but just the fact that you can smell the smell, or when a food smells like it, it's because there's actually particles in there. I once had this very strange question. I forget what it was. Someone left open, it was cold cuts, open turkey in the fridge, and there was milk chocolate nearby. They didn't touch each other, but somehow I think you could like taste one and the other or something like that. They never came in contact. I think if I remember, I asked the chef, they said, yeah, you can't have it. In other words, it's effectively, you know, Recha on steroids. So certain
the meat into the chocolate.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't.
The chocolate probably doesn't
give off so much. Yeah. And so look, there are foods that for sure absorb. Like I know, like the onions. You leave a cut onion, and it what it emits. Everything will smell like it. So that's particles. That's not there's no such thing as smell, but that doesn't seem to be the way they relate to it. So I would say that tom reach is just very very diffuse tom. So okay. Anyway, so that's what Yirmiyah's mother would do for him. Fine. So now, that's the end of the story. Okay, we're done with story time. We're done with medicine. Now we're back to halacha. So Rabbi Yehuda said, "Borei minei deshayim." Amar Rav Zeira, Rabbi Tamer, Rav Chinen bar Papa. Our Gemara says, "Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda." We don't pasuk with Rabbi Yehuda. And you'll all be relieved to know that when you have a salad, I had my salad this morning and I made a borei pri adama. I did not make a borei minei deshayim. That's the girsa that most have. Some Rishonim don't have the statement at all. But the Ramban, which is on the sheet that I gave you, which we may or may not touch upon now, the Ramban had a girsa apparently of Ein of Halachic Rabbi Yehuda. And now the Ramban knows that almost all the Gaonim and Rishonim have been passing that way, but he challenges the basis of their passing in the way they do. But before we get to that, which might be next week, so let's read with the Gemara's discussion. What's the machlokas here? Why do the Chachamim say you make borei pri adama on vegetables, and Rabbi Yehuda says you make borei minei deshayim? They're both true. Vegetables are pri adama in one sense. They're not really. Here's worth thinking about this. I'm a very strange person in that I've learned, come to understand more about foods and the way we eat foods from learning halacha than from actually paying attention to the food. So when we eat grains and legumes, we're actually eating the fruit. You might call it the seed. However, when you eat vegetables, typically lettuce, you're not eating the seeds. You're eating the grain. It's like the difference between horseradish, there it's the root versus the leaves. And when we talk about horseradish, probably is good for Mara, if you're talking about the leaves. Right? I know people do what they do, but the horseradish that most people eat is the ground up root. So you certainly, on one level, the lettuce leaves are not really pre-hadama. If they were the pre, you would probably refer to it, I've never really looked at lettuce seeds, it would be the seeds. But it is something that goes from the ground. So you understand a little bit, you understand Rabbi Yehuda's position from a botanical perspective.
Tree doesn't really mean fruit.
It means the product of. I agree. I understand. But you will see when you look in the Gemara talks about what's ikar ha-pri, what's not. So they certainly understand on some level botanically what's going on. So the Gemara wants to know what's the machlokas about. So the Amar of Zeira, the Itamar of Chinen bar Papa, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Kar, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. Bless God, Yom Yom. Now, Shan and Yom Yom is that's the early biblical Hebrew way of saying Bechol Yom. Right? The late way of saying every day is Bechol Yom, or Bechol Yom V'Yom, like you see in Miguel Sester. But the early way is you say Vayilkutu Oso Baboker Baboker. Baboker Baboker means what?
Every morning.
Every morning. That's actually Pshat in biblical Hebrew there. So it says Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, but the drasha is V'chi Bayom Mevarach Anoso U'Belayla Ein Mevarach Anoso Elalo Ma'ar Lacha Kol Yom Miyom. It doesn't mean every day, but it means every different kind of day. Tein Lo Me'ein Berchosam. It means that the bracha that you make on Shabbos for benching should be different than the bracha you make on Yom. There should be the bracha or for Tila should be different than the bracha you make during the week. Each day, which is different, you have a Chol, you have Yom Tov, you have Shabbos, should have unique brachos. It's part of God's praise that you recognize it's not just the same thing every day. Each day is different. So hachanami, so too, when it comes to foods, kol min v'min, tein lo me'ein berchosa. Now, Rabbi Yehuda only mentioned borei minei deshayim, but if you look in the Tosefta, I think the Ramban quotes it, You have other brachos that are there. If you look in the Geniza materials from some of the Haggadahs, so we have one, we dip one vegetable. But in the, I believe there are fragments from the Geniza we have of Haggadahs, probably from Eretz Yisrael, where they used to make all sorts of different brachos. They used to have, you know, it was like bringing out a tasting menu. I mean, not to fill yourself, but all these different things. They can have so many different brachos that we've never heard of, because that's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, which our Gemara says we don't possibly like, but we'll talk about the Rambam. We don't, Lemaisa. You look puzzled.
I'm just curious. That was for
Karpas. I assume so. That's right. I believe so.
So it really was hors d'oeuvres.
Yes. Yeah. That is. We don't eat
Which
that.
Which is a strange thing. It provokes manishtana.
Yes.
What are we doing eating hors d'oeuvres before making a mochi?
If you ate so much.
So that's a discussion later in the show. The Gemara doesn't raise that issue, right? If I could give you the very logical argument that since it's part of a meal, that's why we do it, it's covered by the Berachas HaMazon. But that's a sugya we're going to do, God willing, at some point, hopefully before we break for August. Okay, we have to do dessert, which I know everybody's eagerly awaiting. Did we really talk? I know I'm not here. I gave this shir in Tina. We have to talk about brachas on dessert. But it's part of the issue of brachas. Let's say you have something before you wash, and then stuff after the meal. What kinds of brachas do you make? What brachas do you not have to make, and so on? So that's coming attractions. So anyway, so the Gemara says that's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, that really it's a greater praise to God the more you break things down. From a pragmatic perspective, you could just imagine what it would be like having a brachos be if we had all these additional brachas. It'd be terribly confusing to the children.
Rather, who composed this bracha himself? I mean, where did he? How did these brachos come?
I don't think, you know, if I were to give you the official party line, it came from the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, but now it means that we have a machlokas what the Anshei Knesset Hagdola said.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that question. I suspect that some of the time, I don't know if Rabbi Yehuda, they made up brachos. We are very bracha averse. And we have this rule that any bracha that's not in the Gemara, we don't, you know, the Gemara and have, we don't use, except for, of course, Bar Shamar and Nevi Shtabach. But okay, and all the other exceptions that we have to that rule, that we have to somehow explain why we make these brachas, even though they're not in the Gemara. So that is the way kind of we think. But when you start to look at the Tosefta and probably the Rishonim, and you look at the Gemara materials, it's like they were a little freer with brachas. In the same way, if you haven't seen me in 30 days, do you make a Shechianu? No, but you should. If you haven't seen me in a year, do you make a Kaius? No, because we don't make brachas, but we're not sure. Okay, that's the way we've become with brachas. Well, but that's not one of the shemos. That's, you know, that makes us, as one of my professors in NYU, Baruch Levine, you know, he said we're members of the Hashemite tribe. So
Hashem,
yes. Okay, fine. Let's just finish the Gemara and then we'll stop with that today. The Amar Rav Zeiri came Rav Chanina bar Papa Bor Eish Lo Kamidas Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Midas Basar Vadam, that's because it's the same, this is the Amora chain. Because the reasons Rabbi Yehuda was given Rav Zera or Rav Chanina bar Papa, so the same thing is here. Bo Rei Shaloka Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midas Basar Vadam. How God is different than human beings. Midas Basar Vadam, Kli Reikan Machzik, Mala Eino Machzik. Human beings, when we have to put stuff in a vessel, if the vessel is empty, it can hold stuff. If it's full, it can't. Amal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eino Kain. Mala Machzik, Reikan Eino Machzik. That which is full can hold more. That which is empty can't really hold. Shenemar vayomer im shamoa tishma vim lav lo tishma. In other words, if you're a listener, then you'll listen even more. If you don't listen, then it's hard to listen. Or davarake im shamoa biyashan tishma b'chadash. If you already started to do the old things, then you'll be able to do new more things. But vim yivdev locha shuv lo tishma. So Rashi explains that the person, and I think this does reflect the way we learn, that a person doesn't know anything, it's very hard for the person to learn things. But the more you know, I would say the more you know when you learn new things, the more of a context in which you have to put it. So for a person, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chachma, so the more you have, the more in fact you're able to put in. Okay. All right. I'll let